Green Country Gardener Program on K1 AM 1400 FM 93.3. Our phone lines are open if you have questions or comments for our expert Larry Glass at 1-800-749-5935. Our Green Country Gardener Program is brought to you by Green Thumb Nurseries, United Rentals, Kelly Banks Tree Service, Peters True Value Hardware. Sharpen your shovels and let's get outside.
And a good Saturday morning to you. It's 8:09. I'm Garrett Giles, Larry Glass, the man with the emerald thumb, in studio with us for the program. Larry, how you doing this morning?
Hey, great. What, 3 days without rain?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of a miracle, isn't it?
What happened? What?
Well, I could tell you it's kind of a grace period before we have that 50-50 chance tomorrow.
I know. It's supposed to rain tomorrow and then Monday. And then I looked at the weather forecast.
And then we're back.
Good night. Here we go again. Why don't you wrap a big old rope around that cloud and pull it over to California where they can
could
use
do
it.
That. Yeah, they could use it. They're just talking about that in the news.
Yeah. So anyway, in the garden, a lot of things to do right now. First of all, if you had some really beautiful iris, and a lot of people did, it's time to cut the spent stalks on the iris.
Okay.
And I just use my thumbnail and snap them right off. Anyway, cut those off. Yeah, really.
I got to grow my nails out a little bit before I can do that, maybe. I guess I have more nails than I thought.
These are tough enough to cut roses. Anyway, mulch those tomatoes.
Yes.
The ground temperature is getting fairly warm right now, warm enough, and it wouldn't hurt to put a little bit of mulch on the tomatoes. The main reason why you want to do that is to keep the soil moisture fairly constant, and it helps prevent cracking and other such nasty things that happen to your tomatoes.
Right.
So you might consider doing that because it is going to get dry one of these days, and the tomato will be used to being really dry, and then middle of July it'll rain cats and dogs for, you know, a week, like a
whatever. More than likely, yes.
So then they'll get full of water and then they'll crack. So you want to keep that soil moisture content as steady as possible. Mm-hmm. So anyway, watch for mites also and bacterial leaf spot on your tomatoes. Mites are coming into vogue right now. I've seen a lot of people, you can smell your boxwoods, they'll have mites on them too.
Thank goodness.
And my boxwoods were getting kind of stinky, so I put neem oil on them and no more stink for a while. So
that's good.
So you just have to do it every once in a while. And I kind of respond to the conditions rather than use a calendar. I just respond to what they need at the point. So you don't waste your money and you don't waste your time.
Both things you don't want to waste, like you said.
So that's anyway, exactly you want to watch out for mites and everything else. Your soil, before you plant your annuals, people are still planting a lot of annuals. We got a lot of them to sell, really nice ones too.
Okay.
And you want to make sure your soil is good and loose. And right now, with a little bit of drying weather, the soil is getting a little bit looser.
Mm-hmm.
Although we were digging a foundation for a retaining wall a couple of days ago, and the water started oozing up out of the ground.
Oh, no. Oh. As if we hadn't had enough rain.
Oh, what fun. Yeah, those blocks are heavy, man.
I bet they are,
yeah. They weigh about 80 pounds apiece.
Oh, goodness.
Jeez. So anyway.
Get your workout in.
You bet. So as things get a little bit drier, your plants are going to be starting to grow a little bit too. At my house, I planted some periwinkles a couple weeks ago. They just look like they've been run over.
Oh, goodness.
And they're actually starting to grow now that it got a little bit warmer.
Right.
So you're going to notice an improvement in the appearance of your annuals as well as it warms up a little bit too. This is unusually cool weather. What's the deal?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm ready for it to be warmer. Yesterday was pretty nice. Today should be nice too.
Also, if you do use pre-emergence on your beds, on your annual beds or whatever at home, be getting kind of time to put that second application down. It has a lifespan of about 3 months. Most of them do. So you might want to go ahead and consider reapplying because 3 months ago is when you want to first start controlling the weeds. But if you haven't done it yet, it's not too late. You'd have some control.
When would it be too late?
When?
Yeah.
When the weeds are up. Pre-emergent works. Mm-hmm. Prior to the weeds coming up.
Gotcha.
So if you put it on there, I'm going to get rid of these weeds. Yeah, nothing. You put it there, you put a pre-emergent down, nothing will happen.
Right.
It stops seeds from sprouting. That's what
you would hope.
Yeah. And Bermuda grass it won't control either. So you just have to keep in mind what a pre-emergent does. You get it in the little shaker can, you know, the preen little shaker can and all that. And that helps reduce the weeds quite a bit.
Right.
If you use that in conjunction with a layer of mulch, which we were discussing earlier, mulch, that should do a pretty good job of controlling the weeds in the garden.
Right.
Okay. Oh. Anyway, lace bugs on azaleas. I start to see them coming back too, a little bit of mites. Had a customer call that said she had scale on her plants. Went out and looked at it. It was lichen.
Ooh, lichen sounds worse.
Lichen is good.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The scale is an insect, okay. Really, and it draws the juices out of the plant. What a way to live.
Yeah.
Spend your entire life drinking. That's not very healthy. Like why they don't live very long. But anyway,
pretty much.
And there's a difference. A lichen is actually a symbiotic relationship between a fungus and an algae.
Okay.
There's two separate organisms living together, and lichen typically is evidence of good, healthy air. And I see a lot of lichens here in Bartlesville, so I guess we have pretty good air.
That's good to know.
But it's that that splotchy gray and green. Splotches on your tree trunks. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they're on the, I think it's the north exposure. Correct me if I'm wrong, but anyway, if you're going through the woods, the lichens will tell you what direction. Yeah, they're on the north side. What direction north is?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I've heard that before. Uh-huh. Sorry, it took me a minute to process that too.
So, distinguishing that from which is a benefit. To the plants from that which is harmful is important to know. So anyway, you can Google lichens and see what they look like. But anyway, so that's scale is going to become a little bit of a problem too. And the target pests are crepe myrtles are very, very susceptible to scale. A whole army of them came here in town a few years ago and they've kind of spread. And actually somebody brought an oak branch into the nursery a week or so ago, covered in scale. Which is really anomalous considering the weather we had this last winter.
Right.
It was really an anomalous occurrence. But anyway, you got to watch your plants for that too, because it's difficult to see. It just the plants just all of a sudden get just kind of weak and lethargic, and the leaves get small, and you get all this black sooty mold on it. Well, that's a sign of scale. Ants too like scale real well too. Mm-hmm. Because as a very tricky way for them to reproduce, they have honeydew, which is a sugary substance, and the ants absolutely loved it and incorporated in that sugary substance or little eggs for the mites. And the ants crawl over there and they get those little eggs and sticky to their legs, and they walk around and they spread them and
spread the eggs
around too.
Makes the scale worse.
Talk about symbiosis. That's a pretty good relationship there.
Scales are scary.
The ants, you know, maybe the ants will go on strike. And
up with scales.
I'm tired of doing your work, you know.
Right.
But anyway, so that's another thing to really begin watching out for. And how do I know if I have scale on my plants? Well, you look at them and you see these little bumps. I was at a customer's house yesterday, and really no scale anywhere, with the exception of a redbud tree up front. It had some, and I checked them out, and they really weren't active. They were basically relics from the year before. So it really wasn't much of a problem yet. However, they do tend to leave, their eggs behind, so they're going to have a problem. So they need to put some imidacloprid on there to control the scale. Works rather well.
Okay.
So anyway, watch out for those two. Look real closely at your plants. Another pest that's going to be coming into vogue really soon are bagworms.
Ooh. Bagworms and scales just sounds like news for trouble, basically.
Yeah, and I was at a house a couple of days ago, and we were walking through the yard, and we got close to the junipers, and I said, "You have bagworms. How do you know? I can smell it." Mm. It smells like this very old turpentine kind of smell. It's just
gross. It's really gross.
I said, "I think you've got bagworms on your junipers." So we looked, couldn't see any. I guess they were up high or something. But anyway, they're going to be coming out pretty soon too. And a lot of times after we have a weather event like we had this last winter,
right,
the pest infestations such as that tend to be a little bit worse. So be ready. And we do have the means by which you can control these critters, actually. The bagworms can, at this point, can be easily controlled with BT, or Bacillus thuringiensis.
Okay.
It's a microbial type insecticide, and it remains on the plant for a fairly long period of time. Sometimes, if it doesn't rain too much, it doesn't wash off. But anyway, it's a bacterial spore, and the caterpillars eat this spore along with your prized plants. And they get, their stomach gets paralyzed. They just die.
Okay. So makes sense.
Their metabolic rate's really high when they're really growing like they are, and they stop eating, and then they just starve, basically. So it sounds terrible.
It does.
A house I used to live in here in town, we had a whole row of junipers behind, and they were just covered in bagworms, and I put that on there, and it worked. Got rid of them all.
Right.
And we also had leaf miners on elm trees, little tiny little inchworms that will actually just skeletonize the entire leaf structure of a plant. Hmm. And I got up on the roof of the house and sprayed that BT up there, and no more leaf miners. So it works pretty well. It's something with which they have no immunity, so it works rather well in that case.
Okay.
So that's what's coming up in the world of pests.
Bagworms and scales, and yeah. Lichens are your friend. That's
exactly
what we got today.
Exactly. So, getting to the lawn, the crabgrass emergence was a little bit late this year. And when we have a lot of rain, a lot of times your crabgrass control gets diluted. Mm-hmm. So take a good close look at your yard, and I really see the crabgrass just coming up. You know, look out the window. Everywhere.
It's everywhere, yeah.
Yeah, so be aware of that. It's coming up. There is a post-emergent control for crabgrass called a quinclorac.
Okay.
And it does a good job to kill it, selectively remove it.
Right.
But it does cause your Bermuda grass to weaken somewhat, and it'll also cause your fescue grass to weaken a little bit too. So you want to, as much as possible, apply this properly. And trying to, I know I should put my phone on airplane mode.
It's sounds like that's a nice ringtone there.
Somebody's
Mike.
Calling the doctor here, yeah. But anyway. So anyway, you want to where were we so distracted?
You were talking about crabgrass.
Crabgrass, yeah. So if you fertilize your yard real well and keep the grass relatively tall, the crabgrass will have a more difficult time with it. So it's time to raise that mower up a little bit too. And if you haven't put down your crabgrass control, I think you can still get some control.
Okay. We're talking with Larry Glass, the man with the emerald thumb, here on Green Country Gardener. It's 8:21. Larry, I think we'll take our first break. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Tim from United Rentals. Want you to know we have any rental need that you could possibly have at a competitive rate with excellent service. So if you have a project coming up on the weekend that you need a boom for, you need a water pump, a trencher, a mini excavator, we can take care of you. You pay a one-day price, you keep it the entire weekend, you're not in a rush, it's a great deal. Come see us, give us a chance to take care of you. We are local and customer focused. You can give us a call at United Rentals. 918-333-9580.
Spring is here at Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses. And Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses has new shipments of annuals, perennials, herbs, trees, and shrubs arriving daily. It's a must-see what they have in stock. Get ready for spring at Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses, home to Bartlesville's largest plant selection. Discount days are back. Every Wednesday, take 10% off regular priced items. Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nowater Road. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, noon to 5, Sunday.
Shelly Goolsby with Jericho Tile and Carpet and Stone Outfitters. We think radio is a great way of advertising. If you want superb results, you should use radio too. Radio gets results.
Radio gets results.
Radio.
Radio gets results. That's radio.
Who
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
Back with the Green Country Gardener. I'm Garrett Giles, Larry Glass joining me. If you have any questions about gardening or maybe even your yard or something happening in the garden, just call us at 918-336-1400 or 1-800-749-5936. Those numbers one more time, 918-336-1400 or 1-800-749-5936. Larry, we were talking about crabgrass a little bit. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about there?
Yeah, on your lawns, I've raised my mower all the way up right now and put down some nitrogen fertilizer and actually put down some iron.
Okay.
Iron sulfate and or chelated iron. Really did a lot to deepen that green color. So if you want a really pretty looking lawn that's really dark green, you might want to consider using either a fertilizer that has iron incorporated into it or use a separate application of iron. And typically, I just do separate applications and kind of respond to the condition of the grass.
Right.
And it's a real pretty dark green color. Very nice.
Dark green colors are always good on the eyes, so it's very refreshing.
Make the neighbors green with envy.
Exactly.
And the important thing is not to just fertilize the grass once. You want to do it on a fairly consistent basis. Mm-hmm. And typically once a month, while it's warm like this, between now and Labor Day, you do it about once a month. And that should... it should keep it going real well. Now, you don't have to really put it on very heavily. You just want to get it to where it's growing real well. And so make your grass happy.
Give it that iron sulfate.
Well, we have our soil pH typically is a little high here, and that's one thing. And another thing, we tend to be deficient in iron in a lot of places too, and that can deepen the green color. So that's either form of ironite or... can get a liquid. I like the ironite better. It takes a little longer for it to work, the ironite, but it does stay in the soil a little bit longer than the liquid iron.
Right.
So anyway, we might consider doing that too. Broadleaves, if you got a lot of dandelions and things, they can be controlled now with a broadleaf weed killer.
Okay.
So get those pesky weeds out of there, like over there, you know.
Yeah,
and if you really don't, if you just have a few weeds, that's what I do when I mow the grass. They just pull weeds up. Throw them in front of the mower and they get obliterated.
Right.
with a ninja blade.
Yeah. Been sharpening your blades,
huh? Yeah, I just sharpened a blade last week. Made a big difference in how it mows the grass. So anyway, on the lawns, it's kind of time to do that. Really, watering is concerned. I really wouldn't do a whole lot of watering at this point. The moisture level is really good right now. And the water you put from your sprinkler system might be a little bit of a waste. So really, before you irrigate, I know water is kind of expensive. Check those moisture levels. And yeah, actually, a lot of my customers, they just water the lawn manually when it needs water, rather than just have it repetitively water and water and water as needed, as you think it's needed, but really it's not really needed. It's good for the grass to dry out a little bit between waterings. It helps keep fungus down and all that. Phytophthora primarily to keep it under control. Yeah, especially if you have fescue grass, you want it to dry a little bit between waterings because it is susceptible to phytophthora, especially when the nighttime temperature gets up in the 60s and or so at night. Then the fungus just goes bananas, like itchy feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Athlete's foot.
But anyway, another thing you can do is to keep it green is apply maybe a little fertilizer with some sulfur in it. And that'll help darken it too.
Okay.
And in some cases, if none of that really works, you might have a magnesium deficiency, and you might consider using some Epsom salts on it too. Not too much. It doesn't take much of these trace elements to encourage some green growth. So if you're really not happy with the color and you're putting down nitrogen, and it's just simply not working, you just might want to check the soil, check the pH of the soil. And see if it's maybe way too alkaline. or it may be a little bit too acid for your soil, and then you make corrections, and then you should solve the problem. So these plants, they have what in their roots called active transport cells. In other words, a little tiny root hairs. This is getting down to the cellular level.
It is.
And the nutrients are drawn in by these root hairs, if you will, and they use basically a active transport. They just bring it all in from that point right there.
Right.
And if the nutrients are not there, it just doesn't happen, and the grass kind of suffers from it. This is true of all plants, really, if they have a similar mechanism to draw nutrients in. Mm-hmm. Remember biology back in college?
I do, yes, a little bit.
Botany and all, that's where we learn all this stuff, yeah.
Exactly right. So, it's been a minute, but yeah.
So, and variations, now these plants, generally they're engineered to grow in a certain environment, a certain soil pH type, and dryness and wetness and so on. Basically, they're evolved, if you will, in that situation. Mm-hmm. And then we bring them to Oklahoma, where we have Johnson grass and hackberries.
Oh, goodness.
Yes, that are native species. Uh-huh. And then you bring what we call exotics in, things like azaleas and all that. They have different soil requirements than we have here. You need to change either the chemistry or the structure of the soil or both in order for some of these plants that are not indigenous to the area to do well.
Right.
So that's where a little advice would come in handy. You say, I want to plant some hollies. And I live over in Park Hill. Will they grow? Well, maybe. Or Sooner Park by the golf course. Will they grow there? Well, you need to maybe add a little iron sulfate to the soil or a lot of peat moss on a very large preparation for them to do well. A classic case of plants not doing well in our climate are hydrangeas.
Okay. Why don't they do well?
They have a somewhat more specific soil chemistry and structure requirement than what we have to offer here. So we use a lot of organic material when we plant hydrangeas. The organic material not only gives the roots a looser soil for them to grow in, one they're more adapted to, but it also keeps the pH down to keep your color right the way you want it. And as the first three letters of the word, four letters, HYD, hydrology and,
right.
and water. They need a little bit more water. So you want something that'll store water a little better. A lot of mulch helps them too. There are some very successful hydrangeas here in town, mm-hmm. in some places.
Right, and, some places, that's the key word.
And usually you see what's underneath them, and that's you can just about dig the soil out with your hand. They do quite well.
Larry, I think we have a call.
Okay, put them on.
Really quick. Good morning, you're on the Green Country Gardener. How can we help you?
Good morning. I just was going to ask Larry when the best time to put my pecan hulls down on my azalea plants.
Anytime. We're fine, yeah. I kind of like to do it if there's rain coming or something because it'll leach that tannic acid into the soil real well. So
okay,
if you do put it down, you want to make sure to water it through well.
I think you got the answer he needed.
Anyway, yeah, the tannic acid in the pecan hulls helps keep the soil pH low, and azaleas like that. You can also, on your azaleas, getting back to them, you can tell that the soil pH is really not what it should be by diminished leaf size. When you buy the azalea, it's got a leaf. It's about as maybe as big as one of your fingers or so.
Right.
And if after a while the leaves get a little bit smaller and they start to turn a little bit yellow, that's indication of chlorosis.
Chlorosis,
yes. Chlorosis happens when the pH is too high. And remember what we talked about active transport in the roots?
Yes.
If the pH isn't right, it can't take up the nutrients. So you need to lower that pH.
Gotcha.
We got a color?
We do, yes. They're on the phone. Let's give them just a second.
That's cool.
For them to be put on hold.
So anyway, kind of know what your plant requirements are before you plant them, and then also know what exposure they require and all that other stuff. A lot of times the tags on the plants will give you an indication. However, some of the plants we get in are from Oregon, and they say, well, this plant will grow in full sun.
Right.
But we say, not in Oklahoma.
It's
a little different latitude, and our air is a little different than it is up there, so... Not always.
Not always, indeed.
Always ask.
That caller's ready whenever you are.
Okay,
Larry.
Put him on.
Good morning. You're on the Green Country Gardener. How can we help you?
Sorry about that. I started getting so much feedback, I just disconnected.
Oh, you're good. You're good.
Okay, so basically any time now, and just make sure I keep it good and moist and watch the leaf size to see if I need to do it again.
What's that? On your...
The on the azalea.
On the azalea, yeah. Watch the color also, and the gloss on the leaf, too, has a big effect on that. If the leaves are getting kind of dull, too, and you get a small leaf size, you just need some azalea fertilizer. Typically, that'll fix it.
Okay. Well, appreciate the information. Okey-do.
Thank you now. Now, the leaves that are small on the from the pH being wrong, they won't get any bigger. They'll stay where they are. The newly emerging leaves will grow out better and more lush if the soil problem has been corrected.
Gotcha.
Okay, cool.
Larry, I think we'll take a quick break real quick, and then we'll be back with more of the Green Country Gardener here.
Check out June's monthly bargains at Peter's True Value in Dewey. Get your yard in shape to resist heat and drought with Scott's Turf Builder Southern Lawn Food. A bag to cover 5,000 feet is just $15.99 at the register after a $2 in-store instant rebate. Keep your garden weed-free with a 13-pound bag of Preen Garden Weed Preventer for $16.99 after a $3 instant in-store rebate. And Peter's has a True Temper 6-cubic-foot steel wheelbarrow for heavy projects for $79.99, a savings of $20, but only at Peter's True Value in Dewey.
Start saving piles of cash right now on your new car, truck, or SUV from your Silverado City Roman Chevrolet Buick. Save hundreds, even thousands of dollars by buying or leasing your next vehicle. Roman's offers a huge variety of specials, offers, and deals on your favorite vehicles. Get all the details today from one of Roman's friendly sales experts. Buy or lease from Roman Chevrolet Buick, 2313 West Main in Independence. Visit RomansGM.com today. Remember, Roman's delivers nationwide.
Join us weekday mornings for One-on-One with a Professional on K1 AM 1400 and FM 93.3. Tune in at 9:30 on the first and third Mondays when Bartlesville Health and Rehab will be in. On the second and fourth Mondays, listen in to hear important information about city government when representatives from the city will be in for City Matters. Tuesday at 9:30, tune in with Dr. Carrie Williams from Med Club Bartlesville for Health Talk. The first Wednesday of the month at 9:30, Green Country Village Senior Living Community will be in to talk about senior living. Join OKM Music on the first Wednesday of the month at 9:45 for information about Bartlesville Entertainment. On the second Wednesday, Regent Bank will be in at 9:30 with financial information. Go one-on-one with Dewey City Manager Kevin Treese at 9:45 on the second Wednesday. Join K1 Car Talk with Dunge's Family of Autos every Thursday morning at 9:45. On Fridays at 9:45, it's Brew and Buzz with Thad Dilbeck. Keep informed with One-on-One with a Professional exclusively on K1.
Welcome back. We're with the Green Country Gardener Program on this Saturday, June 5th. It's 8:36, 69 degrees. We have sunny skies. Number to call if you have any questions for Larry Glass, 918-336-1400 or 1-800-749-5936. Larry, we've talked about a wide range of things. Where are we at now?
Let's talk a little bit about crepe myrtles.
Okay.
Crepe myrtles are a very popular plant here, primarily because they will bloom when it's really kind of hot, mm-hmm. and they tend to survive the heat rather well. Mm-hmm. They took a bit of a stumble, though, this last winter, though.
Yeah.
And, golly, these big old tree-form crepe myrtles are now bushes again.
Right.
So in the past, we've been really marketing crepe myrtles as a bush rather than a tree. And then we've had several mild winters in a row, and then we have what we call a correction, which kind of fixes everything. They'll get there again. And my advice on the crepe myrtle is at this point, they're coming up from the ground, and they'll grow up, and they'll have multiple branches on them. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and leave them at that form at this point in time. Let them grow for a year like that. And then when the wintertime hits, you can start to culture a more tree form shape to them. In other words, take out maybe all but say anywhere from 3 to 5 of the trunks that are growing on there. Pick out the dominating ones and leave those, and cut the rest of them back.
Okay.
And getting a tree form crepe myrtle is not their native form. It's just something that we basically cultivate by nature. They're just a great big kind of a big brushy bush thing.
Okay.
So that's the deal on crepe myrtles.
Yeah. See, I have some crepe myrtles in my backyard, and they are about down to here. The new stuff that's growing, and the other stuff is kind of up here above my head, and it's dead. I thought it might grow back because that's what it was like last summer, and it grew back on its own and blossomed. Do I just keep that up, or should I cut those back?
You don't want to. Well, just for appearance, you want to cut those dead stems off.
Right.
Or you can paint them different colors, maybe.
I might. Yeah.
That'd be cool. Yellow and red and blue.
Maybe purple.
Purple, yeah.
Pink if you're
nonetheless, they're not going to come back at this point.
Gotcha.
They should be out right now. So what? The good thing is I had one golly in front of my house that's 15 feet tall, but the flowers are way up there. Mm-hmm. The good thing is I'm going to be able to see them this year.
Right.
Won't have to climb a ladder to see my grape myrtles. But so with that in mind, we might want to, you know, keep that in mind when doing our landscape compositions, that perhaps this can happen.
Right.
Go ahead and use them for a specimen interest plant and all that. Be prepared for something like this to happen.
Okay.
Now, if you still want a tree form crepe myrtle, we have some good ones at the nursery.
Okay.
We have some red rockets that are really nice looking plants and some other varieties. We planted some Natchez crepe myrtles, some big ones too. They got zingback. We planted some of those.
Gotcha.
And a few other varieties. So we also have the Princess Leia and our Princess Zia crepe myrtles, which is an interesting plant. They only get so tall.
Right.
3 feet tall or so.
Oh, that's pretty nice.
4 feet maybe.
Manageable.
Because it's the plants that I level, or the flowers that I level. And they kind of stay small like that. So if they die all the way to the ground, so what? They'll be back up there again.
Well, they will make a return.
Yeah, really. So to encourage your crepe myrtles, you might want to go ahead and start a kind of a regular fertilization regimen. And for them, I really kind of like to use the Milorganite fertilizer. It seems to have the right combination of stuff for them, and they respond very well to it color-wise, as well as leaf appearance and so on.
Okay.
So that'd be a good one to use around your crepe myrtles. And I basically use that on all my shrubs. The hollies like it too, mainly because it has 4% iron.
Iron. You got the iron in
it. Yeah, the iron in it helps the plants, helps the appearance of the leaves of the plants and all that too. So you might consider giving them a little bit of fertilizer, and that'll help them out too.
Okay.
Something you don't want a lot of nitrogen. You get a lot of superfluous growth, and they just get kind of wiggly when they get up there. So you want something that'll spur on some growth, but not too fast of a growth.
Gotcha.
And really, wait till the winter to do your tree form sculpting. You just go ahead and let it grow out. It has to do a lot of photosynthesis to make up for what it lost in the winter. So that's kind of it with crepe myrtles. So we have lots of Japanese maples right now. And, of course, hanging baskets and perennials and an annual inventory are really good right now. We got some of these big begonias, whopper begonias, are really very popular plants. And we brought up some of the... bubblegums too, bubblegum petunias.
Bubblegum petunias.
Yeah, they're this bubblegum pink color, and they tend to grow everywhere. I like to plant them in rock gardens because they like it kind of dry.
Okay.
Dry. And you put them on the edge of a wall, they sort of hang over all this color, you know, pretty nice too. And the sweet potato vine, they're good ones to use. If you have a fairly large area you want to cover, or maybe a retaining wall or something you want to soften the edge a little bit, the sweet potato vine does a good job of that too.
Hmm.
So a good selection of plants right now.
Yeah.
Okay. That leads us to tree of the week, which is a lace bark elm.
Ooh.
Ooh. An elm tree.
Yeah, elm trees are nice.
I tell people, I say, okay, we need the right size tree for this particular area would be lace bark elm. Oh, no, Dutch elm disease. I don't want that. Well, first, it takes 50 years for the Treaty of Dutch Elm disease to begin with. But the lace bark elm doesn't get that.
Okay.
The American elm typically is the one. The American elm has the bigger leaves on it. Those are the ones that typically over a fairly long period of time, will get the Dutch elm disease. But anyway, the lace bark or Chinese elm, or the Ulmus parvifolia, is really a superb tree for urban conditions and should be used as a street tree more there. Primarily because of its very fibrous root system.
Okay.
It doesn't have real these big, thick, heavy roots that go out. It has kind of a fibrous system and a more of a net of roots rather than a big, clubby system. So it's pretty cool in that respect. It's known for its quick growth, and particularly if planted in fertile, well-drained soils, it'll grow fairly quickly.
Okay.
I don't like rapid growth on elm trees. That makes them kind of weak-wooded. And elms tend to be a little bit weak-witted if they grow too fast. So don't encourage it too much. Just basically just kick it in the ground and say, you're on your own, buddy, and it'll, it'll do fine.
You make it.
But what I really like about this is the dark green oval leaves. And they vary anywhere from 3/4 to 2.5 inches in length. But I do like the small leaves. They tend to disappear in the fall in the landscape real well. They just kind of, they're so small, they really don't bother much of anything. So, and the color of them too, even when it's hot, they have this real nice glossy dark green color. So they're very attractive in that respect.
Right.
And their other attributes too, we'll discuss after the call.
Yeah, we do have the caller on the line. We're waiting for them to be put on hold now.
Okay.
Yeah, but let's go ahead and keep talking about that.
Okay, anyway, it does well in coarse, fertile, well-drained soils, but it's tolerant of a lot of things, and I really like the appearance in the summertime with this plant, with the color of the leaf and all that. It has a kind of a weeping appearance, too.
Yeah.
And the icing on the cake is the bark. It has this mottled bark. It looks like a camo.
I like that, yeah.
Uh-huh, different. Here's a little picture there, see?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Camouflage look to it, so... Huh. Can peel that off and put it on your Jeep, I guess. And camouflage color on your Jeep.
And go hunting, maybe.
But the bark is very attractive.
Right. Well, we have the caller on the line now, Larry. We'll take that now. Good morning. How can we help you on the Green Country Gardener Program?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question about transplanting the lilac bush.
Yes.
When is a good time?
January.
January.
You
okay.
Bet. Now, right now in that lilac bush, take your shovel, make sure it's fairly sharp, and just make some cuts around it.
Okay.
Probably about a foot or a foot and a half away from the main trunk. Just make some cuts in the ground. And what that'll do is prune the roots. And when it comes time to transplant it later on, you'll have more feeder roots close to the plant and it'll have a better chance to survive.
Okay.
So
that sure answers my question. I really do appreciate it.
Do some root pruning, and it'll have a lot better chance of making it next year.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, I'll take care of that.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Bye now. That's what tree growers do. They prune the roots. I imagine that's kind of like watching a snail race, growing trees.
Right.
Because everything just doesn't happen overnight. It just kind of slow until it comes. When those calls start coming in and people want their trees in, that turns into a really fast rate to get those plants out of the ground and get them ready.
Right.
But anyway, root pruning is very important on transplanting things, especially if you're a tree grower.
Right.
Okay, lace bark elm too. What I like about it is its resistance to insects, resistance to drought, and it's just a tough, hardy tree. If it were to break in the wind, they kind of recover pretty quickly too.
Gotcha.
So they're a really good plant to have around. Around pavement, just like any other tree, 10 feet at the closest from pavement on this. You want to sort of keep it away from that and sort of keep it away from the house too, because it does get to be pretty good sized.
Right.
Good shade tree for the afternoon on the patio or something. And because it doesn't really drop big old leaves or something, it's easier. Leaf blower will clean up after it pretty well. And they do decompose fairly quickly, the leaves do.
Okay.
Drawback is they have seeds, and you have a million little elm trees all over the place at some point in time. But you get that with almost every tree species. But the only thing you get is a male variety of the Chinese pistache. That would be a good one to have. We do carry some of those.
Okay.
And I happen to have one in my front yard, which I didn't buy. It just came up in the backyard, and I got a good lucky flip of the coin on that one. They don't have all the seeds and whatnot associated with the female plants.
Gotcha.
So anyway, these are monoecious, so you will have seeds on them too. So lace bark elm, good plant to have, good street tree plant, and good shade plant, good backdrop plant, and it maintains itself very well.
We're talking with Larry Glass, the man with the emerald thumb, here on the Green Country Gardener Program. It's 8:47. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Spring is here at Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses. And Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses has new shipments of annuals, perennials, herbs, trees, and shrubs arriving daily. It's a must-see what they have in stock. Get ready for spring at Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses, home to Bartlesville's largest plant selection. Discount days are back. Every Wednesday, take 10% off regular priced items. Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nowata Road. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, noon to 5, Sunday.
K1 loves birthday. Each morning we announce all area birthdays, and one name is chosen to receive a certificate for a birthday meal. From Dink's Pit Barbecue, Rita's Cocina Mexicana, Pop's, Daylight Donuts, or Sterling's Grill. If you or someone you know has an upcoming birthday, give us a call. 918-336-1001 and give us the details. We'll announce their name and maybe choose them as our daily winner at our K1 Birthday Club.
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday.
It's the anniversary celebration at the Wooden Buffalo. Today, from 10 to 5:30, Wooden Buffalo is celebrating and invites all to stop by. Come in and check out their variety of vendors with great selections of unique gifts and collectibles. The celebration will include a food truck plus great door prizes. And coming soon, Cotton Corner with a selection of cotton fabrics with great prices. That's the Wooden Buffalo celebration at 829 South Madison Boulevard from 10 to 5:30 today.
Food is the subject on the Dining Guides between 11 and noon Monday through Friday on sister stations 100.1 KYFM and 104.9 FM KRIG. Learn about Wheezy's Cafe, Szechuan Chinese Restaurant, Speedy Drinks, and KFC, all in Bartlesville, CV's in Dewey, and Copan Restaurant and Truck Stop. The Dining Guides on 100.1 KYFM and 104.9 KRIG.
We're back with the Green Country Gardener program. It is 8:49, 69 degrees. We have sunny skies. Larry Glass joining us in the studio. If you have any questions for us, you can call us at 918-336-1400 or 1-800-749-5936. And we actually do have a caller that's been patiently waiting on the line. We'll take that now. Good morning. How can we help you on the Green Country Gardener program?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I got a problem. I'm having to have turf put in. Well, at least that's what we decided to do. Half my lawn was all ripped up because I had to have some plumbing done, so I've got to redo the grass and just do the whole front lawn. But my question is, we're going to put in fescue turf, and what kind of treatment in view of fertilizer and all that sort of thing should I do after it's down?
Okay, fescue, if you want to get it down, you better get a wiggle on, because I don't like to do fescue in June, July, and August. If it gets hot.
Yeah, it's supposed to happen in the next week or so.
That'll probably be all right. If the weather continues like it is, as far as the weather is concerned, it'll probably do okay. At this point in time of the year, I wouldn't use anything stronger than a 10-20-10 on it. Because you don't want to encourage a lot of leaf growth this time of year. It's going to get really hot, and fescue is not a hot season grass.
I see. Okay. Well, is fescue the right grass to use?
If you've got some trees
in the front lawn, so I got too much shade for Bermuda.
Yeah, it'd be the right yard. The right type of grass, but you might find the timing might be a little bit on the off side, perhaps.
Okay, it's just a tough time of year. So I have to watch it and make sure it gets well watered.
Let it water down and let it dry out a little bit between waterings, and don't try to encourage too much top growth on it. And it'll probably take all right, but just keep an eye on it and don't let it get too soggy, and it should do okay. But I've never had a fescue lawn survive being sodded in June though. So be careful with
it. We originally thought about using seed, but I think it's too late for seed.
The best time for fescue seeds in September.
If you do
get some thinning on your sod, then the fescue seed you can fill it in with some seed later on in the year.
But wait until September.
I wouldn't do it. It won't get past the fine hair stage when it's this time of year.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I just hope I'm not wasting my money or losing my money then by putting sod down. I got to do something for the lawn.
You might. You might. You might call up the sod farm or something and ask him get their advice on it too. But just see what they think.
Okay.
Right now, okay. We're just on the very edge. Would you just, I don't know if I want to do that or not. I want to wait until maybe later on.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much, Glenn.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Appreciate the show.
Sure now. Yeah, fescue is a cool season grass. It does like, prefer a little cooler time of year for its establishment. So, maybe, I don't know, if it's in some shade, it might make it okay. Anyway, Shrub of the Week. We got a caller.
I believe so, yes, Larry. We'll give that just a moment just to make sure it is someone that's...
Anyway, Rosa Sharon, or Hibiscus syriacus. This is a one that does very well in this part of the country because it kind of likes the heat. And it has lots of hibiscus-like blooms on it in the summer. The flower buds are just now beginning to set on the Rosa Sharon, so they're going to be out pretty soon.
Right.
In all their glory. So we had them in several configurations, and there's actually some seedless varieties too. The drawback of this plant is it drops seeds everywhere and they crumb up all over the yard. You get a whole forest of Rosa Sharons.
Right.
But they're available in all different colors and flower configurations. So this is kind of a good one. It gets fairly good size, so don't put it close to the house. It should be kind of away somewhere. I like to use it in a fence row. Maybe in a composition with other shrubs, perhaps give you some a sprinkle of flowers in the summertime. It doesn't make a good hedgerow because it can be very inconsistent.
Right.
If the variations in soil can cause some rather dramatic changes in the appearance of this plant. So if you do want to use it as a hedgerow, get the tiller and make sure the ground is prepared very uniformly all the way across.
Mm-hmm.
And I would start with smaller plants. The root system tends to do better if they're smaller and less of a culture shock on them.
Right.
They grow fast enough. They'll be up pretty good size. So anyway, they're available in single and double flowers. They get 8 to 10 feet tall and maybe 4 to 10 feet wide. And the slow to moderate growers, and transplanting is easy, and they're hardy as the day is long. They'll even tolerate the salt breeze, stuff like that. So they're drought tolerant too. So aphids might be the only problem with them, but typically it really won't hurt them that bad. So they're a member of the hibiscus family,
okay.
Of which is related to cotton, and also which is related to hardy hibiscus, which is a very popular annual coming more into vogue. And we do have a good supply of those right now. We have one that has red leaves on it, big old red flowers.
Gotcha.
They're about as big around as a truck tire, these big old.
That's pretty awesome.
Not that big. Good side blooms. And the hardy hibiscus will bloom, and it'll keep on putting on blooms. This particular variety we carry is a red one, red on red. There's a pink on red leaf too. Mm-hmm. They bloom throughout the summer.
Right. Larry, we need to take our final break, then we'll be right back to wrap up the show here.
Okie doke.
In the early 1900s, the world was changing, and the United States was taking its place as the premier industrial and political power in the world. The newest frontier was not the Wild West as much as it was industry and technology. The world was changing around Bartlesville and in Osage County as well during this time. Frank Phillips and his brother L.E. were growing tired of the boom and bust of the oil business and were in the process of selling off their oil leases and making plans to expand their banking business and making Kansas City their headquarters. The Phillips brothers owned lease 185 in Osage County, and by the terms of the lease, if they didn't drill it, they lost it. Well, it wasn't Frank Phillips' nature to walk away from an investment with at least trying, so rather than lose it, they decided to drill for oil, and they drilled 6 dry holes on that lease, and then finally on their 7th try, they hit oil at around 100 barrels a day. Encouraged, they drilled one more just to the west, and on March 22, 1917, Frank Phillips stood on the drilling platform when the earth and all around him began to tremble. The well exploded with a gusher of over 1,000 barrels a day. It has been said that that well was the beginning of Phillips Petroleum Company and therefore the history and legacy of Frank Phillips. Thanks to that well, we still have Willow Rock to remember the West, the oil, and the history of Frank and Jane Phillips. Come visit the past and capture the magic of Willow Rock. Welcome home to Willow Rock.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
And welcome back to the Green Country Gardener program. We're going to get right into it. We do have a couple of callers on the line. Good morning. How can we help you on the Green Country Gardener program?
Good morning. Please talk about rhododendrons. Thank you.
Okay. Rhododendrons are azaleas. Rhododendrons are related. And rhododendrons usually don't do well here because they tend to get a stem virus in the summertime. So I don't recommend them in your landscape.
Okay, then we got the next caller. Good morning. How can we help you?
Yes, I just had about a 70-year-old oak tree taken out of my front yard, and it's in the most aesthetically pleasing spot. How close to that same spot can I plant another tree?
Well, two factors. Number one, depending on how sharp your shovel is. And we like to, as close as we go, and sometimes it's about 5 feet.
5 feet.
Uh-huh.
Okay, what time of year is it too late to plant a tree this summer?
You can plant trees anytime. The container stock, at least the container stock we carry, and even bald burlap trees can be planted anytime. There's no time. You just can't move them when it's hot.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Larry, I know we could do it. We got both calls in right before it was time to
very good. Get off the anyway, air here. Come by the nursery. Check out our good selection of annuals and perennials and trees and shrubs and all that. And we have some really nice wind chimes and some good old house plants, too. And so come check it out. And by all means, when you do your gardening, make sure to keep that shovel sharp. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Larry. That was the Green Country Gardener program here on K1. We'll have him back next Saturday.
Excellence. Stump Funeral Home and Crematory, Bartlesville, Nowata, Barnstall.
This is KWON Bartlesville, K227 CQ Bartlesville.